The CBS News Weekend Roundup after this short break.
I'm Mo Rocca, and I've got a brand new podcast. It's all about the people who have long fascinated me. The one thing they've got in common? They're all dead. The name of my brand new podcast? Mobituaries. From the 20th century's greatest entertainer.
He was everything. I mean, he could play any instrument. He could dance like a maniac.
To the founding father, who just doesn't seem to get much respect.
This guy did everything wrong. So there's no statue, there's no signature on the Declaration of Independence.
You'll learn new things about people you thought you knew.
Were you aware that the day of your inauguration, Audrey Hepburn died?
No.
You'll learn about people who aren't real.
They did not have room in the writing for the older brother because the Fonz became the older brother.
So join me this premiere season of Mobituaries.
This is the CBS News Weekend Roundup.
A political crisis unfolding in Venezuela.
Nicolas Maduro responded with a show of force.
Plus Chris Christie on the criticism he faces.
Those kind of things just don't bother me.
Later, we go to the Super Bowl.
These are two high-profile teams.
And now, from the Capital One Bank Studios in the CBS News Washington Bureau, here's correspondent Steve Dorsey.
Let's start this weekend with nuclear security. On Friday, the Trump administration announced it's pulling the United States out of a landmark nuclear arms reduction treaty that served as a major milepost as the Cold War came to an end. CBS News White House correspondent Stephen Portnoy reports.
The 1987 agreement struck by Ronald Reagan and Mikhail Gorbachev bans short and intermediate range ground-based nuclear missiles like the Pershing II, which the U.S. once deployed across Europe. But Secretary of State Mike Pompeo says Russia has been violating the INF treaty with the deployment of a ground-launched cruise missile.
We provided Russia an ample window of time to mend its ways and for Russia to honor its commitment.
Experts warn the U.S. pullout could lead to a new nuclear arms race. Stephen Portnoy, CBS News, The White House.
There may be another meeting soon between President Trump and China's Xi Jinping. It follows a visit to the White House by the Chinese vice premier to discuss efforts to reach a trade deal with the U.S. More from CBS's Paula Reed.
The president remains optimistic. There is no deal as of yet. He says he would like to meet with the president of China, and the two of them, he says, can really hash out the biggest, most important points of this deal.
The Justice Department says Chinese tech company Huawei violated international sanctions and stole intellectual property, according to a new indictment.
The Justice Department announced a 23-count criminal indictment against the Chinese tech giant Huawei. 10 counts in Washington state allege the Chinese smartphone company stole trade secrets from T-Mobile and obstructed justice.
In 2012, Huawei began a concerted effort to steal information about a robot, secretly taking photos of the robot, measuring it, and even stealing a piece of it.
A 13-count indictment filed in New York alleges Huawei committed wire and bank fraud in violation of U.S. sanctions against Iran.
We will ensure our sanctions and export control laws are enforced.
The New York indictment seeks the extradition of Huawei's chief financial officer, Meng Wanzhou, from Canada, where she was arrested last December and later released on bail. Meng Wanzhou is the daughter of Huawei's founder. Her arrest brought an uproar from Chinese officials who retaliated by detaining two Canadian men.
Ms. Meng has been charged based upon her own personal conduct.
Natalie Brand, CBS News, the Justice Department.
Former Trump campaign advisor Roger Stone was arraigned here in Washington Tuesday on charges stemming from the Russia probe, as there are signs from the Justice Department that the special counsel's investigation is nearing its conclusion.
Roger Stone flashed Richard Nixon's V for Victory sign after leaving a federal courthouse in Washington, D.C. Tuesday morning. Stone's attorney entered not guilty pleas on one count of obstruction of justice, five counts of false testimony, and one count of witness tampering. Stone says special counsel Robert Mueller didn't charge him with colluding with Russia for a reason.
There is no Russian collusion. I had no collaboration with WikiLeaks. I'm not charged with conspiracy. Believe me, if they could have made that case, they would have.
Roger Stone's court appearance follows comments by the acting attorney general, who says he's been briefed on the special counsel's probe.
The investigation is, close to being completed, and I hope that we can get the report from Director Mueller as soon as we as possible.
Special Counsel Mueller will hand off a final report to the Attorney General when the investigation is complete. It will be up to the AG to determine how much of the report is made public. But a new bipartisan bill in the Senate would require the Department of Justice to release the full report to the public.
What's really important here, clearly, is the need for transparency and the public's right to know.
Attorney General nominee Bill Barr will only say he'll release what he can based on the law. Nicole Killian, CBS News, Washington.
The U.S. is moving forward with oil sanctions targeting Venezuela as it ups pressure on Nicolas Maduro to step aside. Correspondent Elizabeth Palmer is there with how the country has been reacting.
Thousands of Venezuelans hit the streets waving flags and shouting freedom. We've had enough, said one protester of this oppressive regime. These protests were peaceful, unlike last week's mass unrest when security forces killed at least 40 people. Nicolas Maduro responded with a show of force. State TV broadcast pictures of him with his military. Will you defend your commander-in-chief, he shouted. Yes, they roared. The message? No amount of pressure from inside or outside the country can force him out with loyal troops like these. Maduro also had a specific warning for the United States. A military intervention in Venezuela, he said, would turn into another Vietnam. Meanwhile, Maduro's opponent, Juan Guaido, joined the protesters in Caracas. The man now recognized by the U.S. as interim president told supporters he was committed to holding free elections. In a tweet, President Donald Trump said he congratulated Guaido by phone on his historic assumption of the presidency and added, "The fight for freedom has begun."
Back home, President Trump isn't optimistic about negotiations in Congress about border security with just 2 weeks left of a short-term spending deal that could prompt another government shutdown.
We will be looking at a national emergency because I don't think anything's going to happen. I think the Democrats don't want border security.
A warm-up across much of the country this weekend after an extreme dip in temperatures. More from CBS's Adriana Diaz in Chicago.
While people are still digging out and dealing with heavy doses of snow and cold across parts of the Northeast, in the Midwest, others are working through the tail end of the polar vortex. The crunching of thick ice is music to the ears of the crew of Fireboat Engine 2, the Chicago Fire Department's icebreaker.
How thick is the ice?
About a foot. It had been broken, but it refroze, you know, so it's just chunks.
Pilot Bob Lund says this is a necessary process to stop people from walking on the frozen Chicago River and to clear a path for other boats. As the thaw begins, other problems are likely to pop up, like ice jams in rivers that raise the risk of flooding or water main breaks from days of sub-zero temperatures. In Milwaukee County, police are investigating two additional deaths that might be connected to the extreme cold. A 62-year-old man was found frozen in his backyard Thursday, and on Wednesday, a 38-year-old woman died in an unheated apartment.
I'm still kind of in shock, like knowing that a lady just died upstairs, that she just froze to death.
Below-average temperatures are also expected next week in the Midwest and the Northeast. Adriana Diaz, CBS News. Chicago.
Coming up, we talk with Chris Christie.
I didn't run for governor or serve as governor to be the prom king.
That's next on the Weekend Roundup.
On the CBS News Weekend Roundup, here's correspondent Steve Dorsey.
Former New Jersey Republican governor and 2016 presidential candidate Chris Christie is out with a new memoir, Let Me Finish, about his own campaign support for President Trump and time serving as head of the transition committee before being ousted and later chairing the president's commission combating the opioid crisis. He joins us from our studio in New York. Governor Christie, it's good to talk with you.
Good to talk to you too, Steve.
Of course, I want to start with a Russia probe. After you ended your own presidential campaign and backed Donald Trump, you kind of got a backstage pass of sorts to his presidential campaign, the transition. You interacted with many of his advisors, including Paul Manafort, Michael Flynn, Rick Gates, all of whom have been indicted in this Russia probe. Are you surprised by this, and do you think it's a witch hunt?
No, I don't think it's a witch hunt, and I think it would be wrong to call it that. I've known Bob Mueller for a long time. when I was United States Attorney in New Jersey from 2002 to 2009. I worked with him when he was FBI director, and I have a lot of confidence in Bob and his integrity, and I think he's running an investigation with integrity. And I'm not surprised, unfortunately, as I write in the book, that the president, unfortunately, has found himself surrounded by a lot of disreputable people. And, you know, bad people lie, and that's what happened here.
Where does the buck stop, though? He's the guy that hired them in the first place.
Well, listen, as somebody who served as governor of one of the biggest states in the country and had 60,000 people working for me every day, you know, the fact is that you rely upon a lot of advice to pick people. Listen, some of the responsibility is the president's. For instance, Michael Flynn is the president's decision. And I worked hard, as I detail in the book, over the course of about 6 months to convince him not to give him that job, and obviously was unsuccessful. He deserves the buck to stop on Michael Flynn with him. On the other hand, Paul Manafort was selected by Jared Kushner. And, you know, he was the one who came up with the idea to fire, you know, Corey Lewandowski and to bring Paul Manafort in. And, you know, a candidate's not going to make every one of those decisions. And so it's a mixed bag. I'm not saying the president has no responsibility, but he also has been ill-served by a lot of people around him.
I want to talk to you about Democrats. You've been in this game in politics for a long time. Democrats are searching for a new face of the party in 2020. In Congress, meanwhile, Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez has emerged as a Democratic force. Who do you think has the best shot of leading the future for Democrats?
Well, I think the front runner now is Vice President Biden, and that's just because of his years of service to the party and his and all of the chits that he's collected through the years that he's been both in the United States Senate. You know, let's face it, and Vice President, he's been in public office up until recently for nearly 50 years. That's a lot of chits to have collected over that period of time. So I think he'll start as the front runner. But I think you remember in our race, Jeb Bush started as the front runner and never got a delegate. So you never know what's going to happen in these races. As far as Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, I got to tell you the truth. I don't understand the concept of somebody who's advocating for a 70% income tax rate to be popular. And when the American people really focus on the stuff she's saying, they'll rather have, you know, her go to Venezuela than have a prominent position in the American government. Socialism doesn't work. Venezuela's showing that socialism doesn't work. And I don't think we need to bring it to the United States.
But don't you think Americans are tired of billionaires in politics? I mean, she's kind of the reaction to President Trump in many ways.
No, she's the reaction to a long-term incumbent in a district in New York City who was never in his district and didn't campaign in the primary because he thought he had no problem beating her. That's what she's a reaction to. She's not a reaction to Donald Trump. And in the end, I don't know how long her career is going to be. I wish her all the best of luck on a personal level. But I so profoundly disagree with her sense that, and I heard her say this in an interview, that somehow it's immoral to be a billionaire. That's not the way America was built. America was built by people feeling like their horizons were limitless, and it was only gauged by the strength of their idea and the amount of their work ethic. I don't think that's the kind of country we want to have, and I'd love to have that debate on the national stage in 2020, because if that's what the Democrats want to argue for, then the Republicans will have a second term in the White House.
On your own presidential campaign trail, you described yourself as a straight talker, an average Joe from Jersey. But when you left office, you were New Jersey's least popular governor ever. A Rutgers poll found just 5% of residents said they were going to miss you. Even your own party had some thoughts about you. You had one of the highest unfavorable ratings among 2016 GOP presidential candidates. Why do you think you're disliked so much?
Listen, polls go up and polls go down. And you didn't talk about the fact that, you know, during my time as governor, I had ratings up in the high 70s as well.
That's usually before, it was after Superstorm Sandy and before you started to back President Trump.
No, backing President Trump was the last bit of that. The fact is, when I was governor, I did some very difficult things that needed to be done. Cutting spending and getting on top of the entitlements that we give to our union employees. And when you do that kind of stuff and the NJEA spends $20 million of advertising against you and you don't have any money to respond to them, that's the kind of thing that happens. I wouldn't trade a minute of what I did as governor. And I bet if you took that poll now, it'd be a lot different after 1 year of Phil Murphy. So, you know, fact is, after 8 years, people are done with you. They're ready for you to go. If you've done your job in any degree of strength of character, then people are going to be, okay, let's move on to the next person, whoever that is. And so that's why George Washington was genius. 8 years is about the right time. We did 8 years, and I have no regrets for the way I conducted myself as governor. And I think now, after a year of increased taxes, increased spending, increased regulation in New Jersey, I can't tell you how many people come up to me on the street and say, we wish you were back. So that poll was valid at the moment it was taken and invalid, you know, a week later. So those kind of things just don't bother me. And I didn't run for governor or serve as governor to be the prom king. I did it to do a job. And if you're looking to be the prom king, you do other stuff with your life, not get into, you know, politics in New Jersey as a Republican.
Governor Christie, in your book, you also wrote then candidate Donald Trump had considered you to be his VP, his chief of staff before you removed yourself from consideration recently, and reports you also were shortlisted to be his next attorney general. What's going on here? Why don't you just jump in as a senior administration official?
Because I don't want to. Fact is that I've not been offered a job in the administration that that I wanted to do, that made me want to get back into public life after 16 years in public life as both U.S. attorney and as governor. And I have two more children to put through school, and I've got to make some money.
Can you imagine a point where you would say yes?
You never say no. You never say never. You never say never. I'm 56 years old, so I'm certainly not ready to retire. So I'm going to continue to work. And if an opportunity came up that I felt was really attractive and I felt like I had taken care of some of the both financial and personal issues that I want to take care of with my family, see my last two kids off to college, you know, then maybe I would consider something. But right now, that's not in the cards for me. And that's why I've said no to the president.
Former New Jersey Governor Chris Christie on his new book, Let Me Finish. Thanks for spending some time with me.
Thank you very much for this opportunity. Good to talk to you.
Up next on the Weekend Roundup, an update on Campaign 2020 on the CBS News Weekend Roundup.
The CBS News Weekend Roundup after this short break.
CBS News Radio presents the Intelligence Matters Podcast, taking you inside the biggest stories in national security.
How concerned are you?
I'm concerned that the Russians never left.
Each week, former acting director of the CIA, Michael Morell, interviews top leaders from the U.S. intelligence community.
James Clapper, Senator Mark Warner of Virginia, Mike Hayden.
And lucky for you, you won't need a security clearance to listen. The Intelligence Matters Podcast. Subscribe now on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or Stitcher. From the Capital One Bank Studios in Washington, this is the CBS News Weekend Roundup. Here's correspondent Steve Dorsey.
I'm Cory Booker, and I'm running for President of the United States of America.
On Friday morning, Democratic New Jersey Senator Cory Booker announced he's running for president. Like many other Democratic candidates, he called for unity around a common purpose. The RNC responded to his campaign, calling Booker a political opportunist. Democratic Massachusetts Senator Elizabeth Warren says she'll soon be making an announcement about her plans for 2020.
Warren made the announcement via social media, telling followers, "I'll make a big announcement about my 2020 plans on Saturday, February 9th. Warren launched her exploratory committee for president December 31st, saying she'd make her bid official at a later date. In the weeks following, she's visited the early primary states as her campaign team continues to grow in Iowa, New Hampshire, and at her national headquarters in Boston. Bill Rakoff, CBS News.
Meanwhile, Starbucks CEO Howard Schultz is facing some political blowback from Democrats about his intentions to run for president as an independent. Correspondent Ed O'Keefe explains.
I will run as a centrist independent outside of the two-party system.
That announcement by former Starbucks CEO Howard Schultz on 60 Minutes has Democrats worried he will sink their chances in 2020. The 65-year-old billionaire is a longtime Democrat, and an independent candidacy could siphon off votes from the Democratic nominee, handing President Trump a second term.
It would provide Donald Trump with his best hope of getting reelected.
Former New York City Mayor Michael Bloomberg, mulling his own run for the White House, warned there is no way an independent can win. In the modern era, the history of third-party or independent candidates is marked by failure.
The volunteers in all 50 states have asked me to run as a candidate for President of the United States.
Only independent Ross Perot in 1992 broke into the double digits, arguably costing George H.W. Bush the election.
The U.S. electoral system tends to reward
two big parties. Oftentimes, voters want to cast their ballot for someone they think has a chance to win.
Schultz's advisors argue he does, pointing to the large and growing number of voters in places like California and Florida who don't identify with either party. Schultz took over Starbucks when it had just 11 stores and fewer than 100 employees. Today, it has nearly 30,000 stores in 78 countries.
Many people are going to ask, what does the coffee entrepreneur know about being commander-in-chief?
I have a long history of recognizing I'm not the smartest person in the room, that in order to make great decisions about complex problems, I have to recruit and attract people who are smarter than me.
In a sign of how serious he is, Schultz announced he's hiring veterans of two successful Republican and Democratic presidential campaigns. But no formal announcement of a run is expected for several months. Ed O'Keefe, CBS News, Washington.
An attempt to derail a concert in Saudi Arabia. Here's CBS News correspondent Pam Coulter.
Growing number of Saudi women called on Mariah Carey to cancel her first ever performance in Saudi Arabia to show support for detained women's rights activists. Celebrities have been making multi-million dollar deals to perform in the country, and Carey is the biggest name star to perform since the kingdom began loosening decades of restrictions on entertainment and music. Activists say her concert is an attempt by the government to polish its image after the October murder of Saudi critic and journalist Jamal Khashoggi. Pam Coulter, CBS News.
A new jobs report.
The Labor Department says employers added some 304,000 jobs to the economy last month.
This is a much bigger number than we had expected. Most of the analysts that I spoke to, they were looking at 180, 190.
CBS News business analyst Jill Schlesinger. The government says the gains came in leisure and hospitality, construction, healthcare, and transportation and warehousing, but the unemployment rate also rose slightly to 4%, partly due to the government shutdown. Peter King, CBS News.
More concerns about a growing measles outbreak in Washington state as parents across the region defend their decisions to not vaccinate their kids.
This area of the Pacific Northwest is becoming a hotspot for both children suffering from measles and parents who do not want to vaccinate their children. Abigail Eckhart is one of them. She's refusing to vaccinate her youngest because she says her middle child suffered severe reactions after being vaccinated.
Do you think the CDC is lying to parents about there's no issues, there's no problems?
I think that they're not, like, really doing the studies like they should be.
The virus is spread through the air and lingers for hours. If one sick child coughs in a room and leaves, another unvaccinated person has a 90% chance of catching the illness. Parents with infected children are being told to avoid public places, even doctor's offices. Governor Jay Inslee has declared a state of emergency.
We're asking people actually to be diagnosed in their homes, not actually to go to the doctor's office, because that can infect people in the office.
Washington is one of 18 states that allows parents to decide not to vaccinate their children due to moral, personal, or other beliefs.
Is there anything that would change your mind and you would go vaccinate your kids tomorrow?
No, I don't think so. I mean, I think that we've pretty much made up our mind about our kids and the way we are raising them.
Thousands have been exposed when those sick with the measles have shown up in public places like here where the Portland Trailblazers play. Public health experts we spoke to say there is no science to back up claims made by anti-vaccination groups, and some describe these outbreaks as self-inflicted wounds on communities where they pop up. Washington has introduced legislation that would no longer allow a personal exemption, but that's in the early stages. Jamie Yukas, CBS News, Portland, Oregon.
A new study finds a link between blood pressure and dementia. Here's CBS News medical correspondent Dr. Tara Narola.
What is good for your heart? It's also good for your brain.
The study looked at the effect of more intensive blood pressure control and risks of developing mild cognitive impairment. That's when people develop problems with thinking and planning, but can still do everyday tasks. It can be a gateway to dementia. Researchers followed more than 9,000 people age 50 or older for around 5 years and found lowering blood pressure more aggressively to below 120 led to a 19% decrease in mild cognitive impairment compared to a less aggressive treatment of 140. About 75% of people over 65 have high blood pressure.
probably one of my greatest fears. I've had a wonderful life. I have great memories. I don't want to lose those memories.
One of my patients, 63-year-old Don Penny, a commercial photographer, has been on medication to treat his high blood pressure and heart disease for about 3 years.
My blood pressure is at a very manageable 120 over 70 over 75, so I'm in a good zone now for having blood pressure.
Dr. Tara Narula reporting on the study published in the Journal of the American Medical Association. Coming up on the weekend roundup, all eyes on the Super Bowl.
More than 40 government agencies are taking part in security operations.
Follow us on Twitter. We've got headlines at CBS News Radio, and I'm tweeting at Steve_Dorsey on the CBS News Weekend Roundup.
On the CBS News Weekend Roundup, here's correspondent Steve Dorsey.
On Capitol Hill, the president's own top intelligence officials went on the record at odds with Mr. Trump's own assessments of global threats to the U.S.
We have won against ISIS. We've beaten them.
That was President Trump just last month.
I'd like to call this hearing to order.
But his hand-picked intelligence team said he's wrong.
ISIS will continue to be a threat to the United States.
They still command thousands of fighters in Iraq and Syria.
And it wasn't just ISIS. CIA Director Gina Haspel and Director of National Intelligence Dan Coats contradicted the president's view on almost every major global hotspot.
The Iran deal is defective at its core.
At the moment, technically, they're in compliance.
Take North Korea, which President Trump insists is no longer a nuclear threat.
That problem is largely solved.
His advisors said the opposite.
We currently assess that North Korea will seek to retain its WMD capabilities.
Notably, at this hearing on worldwide threats, they barely even mentioned illegal immigration, which Mr. Trump insists is the greatest threat of all.
And thousands more lives will be lost if we don't act right now.
Republican leaders downplayed the discrepancies.
Does it trouble you that the president appears to be so out of step with his own advisors when it comes to foreign threats?
I didn't really follow the testimony, so I don't have any observation.
But Leader McConnell himself broke with Mr. Trump, urging him not to withdraw from Syria, even if troops have retaken most ISIS territory.
We've seen the downsides of telling the enemy they can just wait us out. We'll be gone on a date certain.
The intelligence officials also warned that Russia and China are more aligned than they have been since the 1950s and that their global influence is expanding. At the same time, they said U.S. allies are pulling away from us in response to America's new approach to security and trade. Nancy Cordes, CBS News, Capitol Hill.
President Trump responded on Twitter, writing, "The intelligence people seem to be extremely passive and naive about Iran. Perhaps intelligence should go back to school." Meanwhile, the country's top homeland security officials gathering in Atlanta this weekend for the Super Bowl. Correspondent Mola Lenghi takes a look at security there.
7 miles of fencing rings Mercedes-Benz Stadium in Atlanta. There are bomb-sniffing dogs. Every arriving truck gets an X-ray inspection. And a Black Hawk helicopter patrols the 30-mile no-fly zone around the stadium. More than 40 government agencies are taking part in security operations.
For the outer perimeter to prevent an attack by vehicle, you'll see sanitation trucks, cement barriers, water-filled barricades, anything that will stop a vehicle from crashing into the crowd.
Homeland Security officials say there is no known threat against the Super Bowl, but its high-profile status automatically makes it a potential target. There's also security we can't see. A massive cyber attack last year crashed the city's computers for 2 weeks. It was so disruptive, police officers making traffic stops couldn't run license plates. Atlanta Mayor Keisha Lance Bottoms says Atlanta's security systems will all be backed up in case an attack were to happen.
It was waking up from a nightmare to know that our systems have been taken down in the city.
She says the city is more prepared for a cyber attack now than it was a year ago. Mola Lenghi, CBS News, Atlanta.
Now let's check in with correspondent Steve Futterman at the Super Bowl. Steve, let's start with the game that got the LA Rams into the Super Bowl against the New Orleans Saints, with the victory blamed on bad officiating. How did NFL Commissioner Roger Goodell defend the league?
Well, he didn't really defend it. I mean, obviously, everyone knows that was a horrible call. That was a very obvious pass interference call, which we can't say for certain would have given the New Orleans Saints the victory and the ticket to the Super Bowl. Roger Goodell said that they may change the instant replay rules. That is a type of play, pass interference, which cannot be reviewed at the moment. It's a judgment call. They will have the competitive committee, a group of NFL officials, members, coaches, general managers. They get together. They discuss should rule changes go into effect. There are coaches on that committee as well, including, ironically, the coach of the New Orleans Saints, Sean Payton. They will review it and decide whether instant replay should be changed. Now, the commissioner did point out that there are ramifications. If you allow that play to be reviewed, you may be allowing other plays that are judgment calls to be reviewed. It could be a Pandora's box. So they will review that. He did not make it sound like it's a guarantee that they will change the instant replay rules during the offseason.
And what's the mood in Atlanta like this weekend?
Oh, lots of excitement. Lots of excitement here. They would prefer that the Atlanta Falcons were in the Super Bowl, but these are two high-profile teams. The New England Patriots, what can you say? This is the dynasty, and then you have the young up-and-coming team that many people feel could be possibly a dynasty or a dominant team in the future, the Los Angeles Rams. They have the youngest coach in football. They have a young, dynamic quarterback in Jared Goff. So it's a bit of an old versus new matchup, and I think it's gotten the fans excited. Of course, lots of people just want to be in the Super Bowl city. The stadium only holds around 70,000 or so. So obviously when you have hundreds of thousands of people come to the Super Bowl city, not everyone's going to the game. There are lots of other activities, lots of parties during the weekend. If you have lots of disposable income, you can spend it here in Atlanta this week.
CBS News correspondent Steve Futterman having fun at Super Bowl 53 in Atlanta. Thanks, Steve.
Thank you, Steve.
Some men breaking the glass ceiling for cheerleaders at the Super Bowl this year.
Super Bowl week is always the NFL's big rah-rah moment. This year, the league's rooting for something new.
Oh, guys, we're going to the Super Bowl.
Quentin Perone and Napoleon Ginnies made history when they became cheerleaders for the Los Angeles Rams, the first men ever.
What made you think it's time for the guys to step up?
The whole world, especially the world of entertainment, is in a place of being open, and if you can do the job, why not?
NFL cheerleaders were once seen as sideline sex symbols and sometimes jeered as Barbies with pom-poms. But in today's NFL, cheerleaders are often professional dancers. 300 people competed to cheer for the Rams last year. Two of them were men.
If I was like, we're going to be here, we need to make a statement, not just stand off in the shadows and get intimidated.
Jen Padilla and Emily Liebert were floored.
There was a bit of shock at first, but then you realize that it's nothing new. And if the talent is there, which it was, then they deserve to be on this team.
Just to see them dance, go across the floor, I was like, wow, these guys are extremely talented.
Most fans have cheered them on. Some have pushed back.
What do you do in those moments?
We have a job to do, so you can't let anything affect you and it'll affect your work.
With every sideline jump this historic Sunday, the NFL takes a leap forward. Mark Strassman, CBS News, Atlanta.
Coming up, new details about a possible hate crime against a TV actor.
What was alleged done here has no place in the city of Chicago.
On the CBS News Weekend Roundup.
The CBS News Weekend Roundup after this short break.
This is The Takeout with Major Garrett.
Every week, an extended conversation at a restaurant in our nation's capital with newsmakers like Democratic Senator Mark Warner.
What we want to try to do is give the American people the truth.
Trump cabinet member Linda McMahon.
First time that I met Donald Trump was at a Rolling Stones concert.
Neil deGrasse Tyson.
He has keys to the universe.
Actually, it's a key fob.
Right. You have a fob to the universe. Politics, policy, and a side of pop culture. The Takeout with me, Major Garrett.
On the CBS News Weekend Roundup, here's correspondent Steve Dorsey.
The president is responding to what could be a possible hate crime against Jussie Smollett in the Fox hit show Empire.
That, I can tell you, is horrible. I've seen it last night. I think that's horrible. It doesn't get worse, as far as I'm concerned.
Smollett reported to police he was beaten in Chicago Tuesday. Now investigators say dark surveillance images show two figures appearing to follow Smollett, though the three are never shown together on camera.
About a minute later, investigators say another security camera captured Smollett returning to his apartment with a noose tied around his neck. The rope was untied, but still on his neck when police arrived 45 minutes after he says he was attacked. I give you all of me. Smollett, a gay cast member of the Fox hit show Empire, told police two masked white men shouting racist epithets and gay slurs beat him up, knocked him to the ground, and doused him with an unknown chemical after he left a Subway restaurant around 2 a.m. on Tuesday. He also said his attackers allegedly yelled MAGA country, a reference to President Trump's campaign slogan.
Why is it so hard to keep hold? Who got that popular vote?
Smollett is known for speaking out against racism and bigotry, like in this 2017 music video. He is also a frequent critic of the president. The actor was the target of a threatening letter, which the FBI is now investigating. Chicago Mayor Rahm Emanuel.
And what was alleged done here, is this police are working on this, has no place in the city of Chicago.
Correspondent Dean Reynolds reporting from Chicago. We're learning more about a game of deadly Russian roulette between two St. Louis cops.
Officer Nathaniel Hendren walked out of jail with his head down as he awaits trial for allegedly shooting fellow officer 24-year-old Caitlin Alex. Prosecutors say Hendren and his partner, who were on duty, were hanging out at Hendren's house after midnight last Thursday with Alex, who was off the clock. According to charging documents, Hendren and Alex reportedly took turns holding a revolver that was loaded with a single bullet. At some point, the defendant took the gun back and pointed it at the victim, pulled the trigger, causing the gun to discharge. The victim was struck in the chest. Police initially labeled the shooting accidental. The circuit attorney, Kimberly Gardner, has criticized the St. Louis Police Department with obstructing the investigation. St. Louis Police Commissioner John Hayden.
The accusation lodged by the circuit attorney, to say the least, was both offensive and insulting to the force investigative unit and myself.
Hendren was ordered to surrender any firearms in his possession, and his partner has been placed on administrative leave. The St. Louis Police Department says effective immediately, supervisors will have to verify the location of their officers every hour using GPS. Vladimir Dutip, CBS News, New York.
Overseas, tweaks to Brexit in an effort to get a deal between the UK and EU.
So the ayes have it. The ayes have it.
Politicians managed to unite behind a key change to Prime Minister Theresa May's Brexit plan. They want to maintain an open border between Ireland and the British province of Northern Ireland. Lawmakers also urged the government to rule out leaving Brexit with no plan in place.
If this House can come together, we can deliver the decision the British people took in June 2016, restore faith in our democracy, and get on with building a country that works for everyone.
Earlier, members of Parliament dealt the Prime Minister a crushing defeat, rejecting the deal she made with EU leaders.
The no's to the left, 432.
May is now vowing to break the Brexit deadlock by asking the EU to make more concessions. But leaders in Brussels have already said they won't negotiate.
The UK is set to leave the European Union on March 29th, nearly 3 years after a slim majority of British voters said yes to Brexit.
Brexit now! Brexit now!
Many of those Brits are tired of waiting.
Let's get out.
If EU leaders approve changes to the Brexit deal, Parliament then votes on the plan. If the EU won't budge on changes, Britain could end up leaving the European Union without a deal, which analysts predict could trigger economic chaos. Gwen Baumgartner, CBS News, London.
Is France's most famous beverage actually English? Reporter Larry Miller has more on a dispute over the origins of champagne.
In the film Gigi, they sing about the night they invented champagne. But it appears the French did not invent the bubbly. The head of the Tétinger Champagne House says the English created it, like many good things, by accident. He says French monks were supplying the English with cheap, still white wine, which was left on the London docks, where they got so cold they fermented a second time. The suggestion that the English invented champagne didn't go down well in France, where some say they just invented the bubbles. Larry Miller, CBS News, London.
Finally this weekend, there's big Beatles news. Director Peter Jackson is working on a film using unreleased footage of the Let It Be sessions, including the rooftop concert 50 years ago.
JoJo was a man who thought he was a loner.
It would be the last time the band that changed everything played a concert in public. If you call the 42-minute session a concert, and the roof of their Apple Records headquarters public.
Goodbye.
By then, it had been more than 2 years since the Beatles' last live show in San Francisco, where they were escorted out in an armored bus.
Where's the best way out of the way?
And their feelings toward each other had grown as raw as the January weather in London when they hit the roof.
There was a lot of dissension going up there. In fact, I was told that they almost didn't even go through the door on the roof.
Ken Mansfield oversaw the U.S. for Apple Records.
But when they started playing, it was the old Beatles. Paul looked over at John, and John looked over at Paul. These were people that were bonded together by that moment.
You got the wrong road case.
Ringo and John wore their wives' jackets to stay warm. The crew pulled stockings over the mics as wind buffers.
They said, move over once, move over twice.
Five stories down, people on the streets couldn't see who was playing, but they could hear a group that sounded as tight as ever, as they created a traffic nightmare that sent the London police to the roof to pull the plug.
Nobody ever loved me like she did.
15 months later, McCartney would quit the band. No longer the lads from Liverpool.
Hey, let's have a wait, man.
The Beatles were now grown-up men with grown-up issues. Funny how much had changed in 7 years and how quickly the next 50 have passed. Jim Axelrod, CBS News, New York.
That does it for the weekend roundup. Thanks for listening. The show's always online on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, Stitcher, and Spotify. We want to get your feedback. Drop us a line at weekendroundup@cbsnews.com and let us know where and how you're listening. The Weekend Roundup is produced at the CBS News Washington Bureau. Lou Walker is the technical supervisor. Jake Rosen is the intern. Have a great week. I'm Steve Dorsey, CBS News.